The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center, with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is a return guest, actually kind of a frequent guest, Carl Dixon of CapturePlanning.com and PropLibrary.com. Carl, welcome back.
Thank you, Mark. It's good to be here.
Always good to have you. We're going to be focusing today on win rate-focused bidding. So, Carl, kick off there, if you would, please.
Sure. One of the things that I see companies doing a lot is they treat business development and proposals as a cost center. And I think that comes out of their accounting system, where it is, you know, accounted for as a cost. But in reality, business development and proposals are investments, and they need to be managed by the return on investment and not by the cost. When you focus exclusively on cost control, you sacrifice your win rate. And when you look at win rate, it's extremely important for the, you know, financial future of the organization. If you're at a 25% win rate and you increase that win rate by 10%, that's mathematically the same as adding 40% more leads into your pipeline. If you could just snap your fingers and add 40% more leads into your pipeline, what would you be willing to invest or do in order to achieve that? And that's the perspective that people should be bringing to their business development and proposal functions.
Okay. So let's start with accumulating information to make that decision. Where does all this information come from?
When you look at the proposal document as something that closes the sale, then everything that happens before and during the proposal needs to contribute to closing that sale. And since it's a document, what we're talking about is information. The entire process can be looked at as a flow of information into the closing of the sale. So the proposal isn't simply what the writers come up with looking at the RFP, or even with a little bit of input from the, you know, business development. Really, the way you want to approach that is by looking at what information you need to get into the close of the sale in order to maximize your win rate. So that information, a little bit of it comes from the RFP, but a lot more of it comes before the proposal even starts. And when you hear people talk about things like, well, you know, if you haven't started the proposal before the RFP comes out, you know, you might as well not bid. That's true some of the time, maybe even most of the time. It really depends on the exact nature of your business. So it's not really helpful. But once you start digging down into what information do I need to get into the proposal in order to close the sale, and looking at where that comes from, then things like relationship marketing and customer intimacy, things that are sort of fuzzy, become more concrete. And then the role of the people in the process, including people before the proposal starts, business development typically, their role becomes getting the information needed to close the sale.
Okay. So once you get to the, we're going to go after this piece, you've got some thoughts about specifically the writing side of this. So let's start there. What types of information is the writer of the proposal going to require?
Obviously, you want the proposal to reflect the customer's preferences. Well, in order for the proposal to reflect the customer's preferences, the writers need to know what those preferences are. For example, I've seen proposals lose When a company proposed a much better technical solution based on a Unix platform, but the customer preferred Windows. They just didn't say it in the RFP. They wrote the RFP functionally. So the proposal writers needed to know what the customer preferred. Another thing that happens is trade-offs. You know, you're making lots and lots of trade-offs decisions throughout proposal and development and offering design. You want to make your trade-offs based on the way the customer would like those trade-offs made. And in order to do that, you have to know what the customer prefers.
Okay, but how do you, I mean, are your BD people supposed to be able to relate this? Where does that information come from?
What I like to do with the BD side of the process is I like to structure it around questions. And I've actually done this with companies where we get rid of all the flowcharts. We don't think of process as a bunch of flowcharts. We think of process as a series of questions. And we give the business developer a long list of questions that we'd like to get answers to, knowing that we're probably not going to get most of them. But the more we get, the better informed we are throughout the entire process building up to the close at the finish. And you can structure your questions around the things that you need to accomplish in the proposal process. And doing that, you can both gather information as well as assess the information and articulate it in the ways that you need. You can actually build a process around nothing but questions.
Okay. So I'm going to make a quantum leap here and assume that if you have a previous relationship or an ongoing relationship with this particular client, that you may know some of that information ahead of time.
That's one of the beauties about structuring the process this way, because people say things all the time like, you know, you have to have customer intimacy, but what does that really mean? When you sit down and try to answer those questions, you'll figure out what it means pretty quick, because either you're going to be able to answer them or not. And the more you know about the customer, the more solid your relationship is, the more customer intimacy, the easier it's going to be to answer those questions and the more detail you'll be able to put into them.
Okay, so conversely, if this is a new client for you, you haven't done work at this agency, you aren't necessarily behind the eight ball, but you're going to be relying more on the input from your BD people to fill in as many blanks as possible.
And structuring it around questions tells you exactly what you need to go out and do. When you just think of a term like customer intimacy, well, you can have a relationship with the customer. Maybe they pick up the phone when you call, but is it really giving you the information that you need to close the sale? And so when you start from a basis of, you know, answering the questions that you're going to need to write the winning proposal, when you have a new customer, you know exactly what you're trying to learn about them.
Okay, so give me one example of a question that almost positively needs to be answered.
Take any trade-off. Take the most simple, boring part of a proposal. And when I do training, I love to use the organization chart for this. Because that's the part that companies recycle most often in their proposal. They just throw boilerplate at the organization section. But tell me, is this particular customer, do they want a partnership with their vendor, or do they just want to tell you what to do? And how does that change both the way you organize and the way you present and describe your organization chart? So very early in, one of the questions that you might ask during the business development phase can relate to how the customer wants to interact with its vendor, so that when your proposal writers see a requirement to, you know, interact, you know, to describe that interaction, they can talk about it, they can position things the way the customer wants them done.
Cool. We're going to take our first break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'll be back with Carl right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm here today with Carl Dixon of CapturePlanning.com and Prop Library. If you're not familiar with these, I strongly suggest you take a look, especially at Prop, P-R-O-P, Library.com. There's a lot of free stuff there. There is a membership side to it. But every week I pull off information from there and include it in my newsletter because it's really valuable when it comes to the proposal side of the market. And you know, I never have a problem finding new things to link to in my newsletter. So, Carl, let's talk a little bit about making sure writers know what to do with the information that they are provided.
Sure. It doesn't do you any good to gather a whole lot of information about the customer, the competitive environment, et cetera, and then hand it off to writers that don't know how to incorporate that into the proposal. So, you know, we're talking about things like, you know, making sure that it gets written from the customer's perspective and instead of your own. And we're talking about how to position both against the evaluation criteria as well as against things like the competitive environment, and do that while talking about the details that they asked you to talk about and the awareness of the customer that the business development phase brings in. So doing that is not natural or easy, and your writers have to have the ability to properly assess that information, and as well as simply articulate and write the response.
Okay, so to train your writers on this, is that an internal or an external situation, or both?
It's probably both. I like to build a lot of training directly right into the process, and I'm not necessarily talking about classroom training either. When you've collected the answers to the questions that the writers are going to have, you are in a position now, instead of starting from a blank page, to give writers pretty detailed instructions about what they should write, how they should write it, how they should position things, what they should emphasize. And that guidance, those instructions, is actually a form of training. And depending on the strength of the writers that you have in your company, you can provide more detailed instructions, or you can provide guidance about how to do things that, you know, they may not really be strong at. So the way you structure the process, you go from questions into instructions when you start the content planning for the proposal. And those instructions can be a form of training. But I also like to make sure that there's more traditional training wrapped around the process, so that when you're working with writers who are new, and just about every single proposal, it all, you know, involves bringing in subject matter experts or other people who have worked on a proposal in a long time and aren't a specialist. And it would be nice to have a just-in-time sort of training for those people, as well as the skills foundation level training, you know, and that sort of thing. So one of the things that I've done with Prop Library is to add a training layer to the process layer, so that as you're working through the process, your, you know, staff can build both their skills as well as knowledge about what it is they're supposed to be accomplishing.
Okay, we had discussed offline a while ago that you were going to be adding the webinar / training component to Prop Library. So you have your beta out there, or is it rolling, or what?
It's rolling. It's live. I've got about 9 hours of training up so far, and we'll probably have about 3 days worth by the end of the next quarter or so. But yeah, it's integrated into the process. So because it's all web based, so it's all linked. I'm not talking about the kind of training that might happen once a month or, you know, periodically. I'm talking about training that fits the way people work.
Okay. So the process that you recommend, is this the same generic process from bid to bid? What changes there?
What changes is the flow of information. It's the information that is being carried by the process. So your customer circumstances, your customer preferences, those things will change how you go about, you know, articulating your bid strategies, for example. But the fact that you have bid strategies, or the fact that you need to gather this information, doesn't change. But there's also a level to it that is very specific to each company when you get down into business line issues. You know, what you need to qualify a lead may vary from company to company, because there will be specific things relevant to a business line. For example, at one company, the number of staff required to be bid is a bid no bid indicator. The next company, they don't even look at that. Okay. So the way I've approached that is to have a, you know, to separate out the items that apply to all companies, and then provide a placeholder where companies can put in their specific business line issues.
Okay. So when you're training companies to build and implement this process, the same basic shell applies from company to company. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. But, you know, like when we talked about structuring the business development phase around questions, the questions one company might need to ask could be very different from another company.
Okay. Now, would that be necessarily dependent on the size of the company, or what the client is looking for with the bid, or what impacts that part?
Has more to do with the subject matter of the bid, or the type of offering. So if we're talking about IT, it could be different than if we're talking about, you know, engineering, you know, and, you know, even within something like IT, I mean, the difference between software and networking, the questions that matter, or whether you're doing staffing, or services or product bids, you know, those are really the kind of things that drive the most change.
Okay. I think we can start this. We have a little bit of time left here. The inspiration part of this process, how much of the writing is inspired by what you're learning versus the recycled stuff you may have in your internal library?
One mistake that a lot of companies make is recycling their narrative. Okay, they'll reuse old proposals. And they're doing it because they want inspiration, but they're doing something that reduces their win rate, because what they end up with is something that isn't built around the customer's perspective, this particular customer. So what I like to do, instead of giving writers reuse files, something to recycle, I like to give them what I call recipes, and give them ideas of things that they should address, and potentially long lists of things to address and things to consider in each of the various sections of the proposal, but to not give them the exact words, the narrative, just to drop into the proposal.
Okay. We're going to take our next break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Once again, you can find Carl at proplibrary.com. And we shall return right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. I'm here today with Carl Dixon. If you don't know Carl, Carl has been... in the proposal bidding side of the game for a while. We'll just call it a while. And he's widely recognized as one of the leading experts in this arena. I know this because I talk to a lot of business development people, proposal people. I speak at the APMP events. And when Carl's not there, people come up and say, why isn't Carl here? So if I'm speaking there again this year, Carl, I really need you there so I don't have to answer that question. So.
Thanks, Mark.
Well, let's start bugging them. So the next step in this process, and I pulled this off an article from Carl's Prop Library, just go there and I'll put the link in the description at federalnewsradio.com. Look up AmTower Off Center. But separating the writing side of this proposal writing side from the offering design, this is a short bullet in the article, but it's not inconsequential.
I've been working on proposals for almost 30 years now. And when I look back and I think about the worst proposal disasters that I lived through, you know, the ones that cause real trauma. And I think about, the proposals where companies botched the draft at Red Team so badly they had to go back and redo it all, and they never could catch up and recover from it, even though they tried and put countless hours into it. Almost every one of those was because they were trying to design their offering by writing about it. And writing about a design, especially when it's an engineering process, engineering by writing about it is a horrible idea, and yet companies do that time and time again. So before you sit down to write the narrative draft, you should have thought through your offering design. And if it's an engineering process for designing your offering, you should have a engineering methodology to consider what to offer and go ahead and review that and validate it and then write a description of it. That one thing for some companies can make a huge impact on their win rate because the thing that's eating up their proposal time, the thing that's lowering the quality, and the thing that's creating that crunch at the end, most often is when they get to the review stage and they change what they want to offer because they don't like the way it looks, because they haven't considered it before they wrote the description of it. So designing your offering by writing about it is just asking for that horrible crunch that comes at the end of a proposal. And if you're experiencing that frequently, it's definitely having a huge negative impact on your win rate.
Okay. One of the points that you make here is have an efficient methodology for designing the offering. Is that incumbent upon the writer, or is that a broader effort?
Yeah. If your writer is designing the offering, you've probably already made the mistake. Think about, you know, what your company offers. And if it, you know, in some cases it's an approach. In other cases, it's something that's going to fulfill specifications. Sometimes there's, you know, a hardware, a tangible side to it. Sometimes it's all, you know, pure services. But if you can't sit down and describe, even verbally, what it is you're planning to offer and why it's the best offering for this proposal and why you think it's going to take you to the win, if you can't describe that to other people and sit down and all agree that this is what the offering should be before you start writing, okay, then your win rate is in clear jeopardy.
Okay. So migrating on from that, the next point would be knowing your bid strategies before you start writing. I'm assuming that that ties in with designing your offering.
The two go hand in hand, because what you want your writers to do is to substantiate your bid strategies. You want them to make a point. You want your proposal to have a point. And most proposals don't really have a point. The point that they end up making is, yeah, whatever you want, we'll do it. Okay. But if you want to actually make a point, if you want to be able to say something that matters about your differentiators, then you have to think about that before you start writing. And when you combine this great offering design that everybody agrees is, you know, what you want to offer in order to win, and you combine that with the bid strategies, and then you sit down to write. Now you're explaining the features of your offering design in the context of things that matter, and you're making the points about your bid strategies, and that's how you win proposals, and that's how you increase your win rate.
Okay. So who's the ultimate decider, if you will, on figuring out the bid strategies? Again, is this a team effort? Is this an individual? What are we looking for?
It depends on your company. It depends on your offering. It depends on the size of the bid. The most important thing from a process perspective is that you validate your bid strategies. But whether on this particular bid and this company, validating the bid strategies requires a cross-functional team and the involvement of executives up to a certain level, that depends on the company and the size of the bid. In some companies, there's only one line of business, and the proposal shop develops some subject matter expertise in it. So the proposal shop, knows what to say about, the line of business, and things can become pretty routine. But in other companies, there's multiple lines of businesses, and they do solutions, so every single bid is unique. Some companies always bid to the same customer. Some companies bid to a different customer almost every time. So you need to structure how you validate your bid strategies around, the nature of your particular business.
Okay. So let's focus for a moment on the smaller business. So let's say the proposal writing side falls into not necessarily a professional writer's hands. Can they use these same processes to get to the same point?
They can use the same process. They'll want to provide more guidance to their writers, and their review process might change from being a back-end break-fix style review into more of a collaborative thing, because they'll have fewer subject matter experts, and a lot of times the executives are the subject matter experts in small businesses. So they'll need to be involved early on to validate things like the offering design and the bid strategies, and not just wait until the end and look at it when it's at the red team stage.
Okay. Would this be a situation, depending on the size of the bid, obviously, where you would recommend bringing in an outside expert to do the writing and to guide them through the process? Let me just throw out one instance. About a year and a half before the award of Suit 5, a small business that I was working with in Tennessee called and said, you know, you told us to look for the opening for the next Soup iteration. We hear it's, you know, not too far in the distant future. We need some help. And I searched on LinkedIn and found independent proposal writers who had worked successfully on previous iterations and hooked them up. And they were fortunate enough to win a spot in the initial round, not the protest round. So when do you bring in the outside person?
You bring in the outside person when either your processes are not mature, and so you need somebody to help you know what the right processes should be, or you bring in an outside person when you need specific subject matter expertise that you don't have. I'm a big fan of companies owning their customer relationships and as well as being subject matter experts. I don't like to bring in consultants to provide subject matter expertise or customer awareness, but if you got to do it, you got to do it. And you can also bring in, consultants when you need staff augmentation, when you just simply don't have enough bodies to do everything that needs to be done in order to pursue a bid.
Okay. We'll take our next break now, our last break now. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Carl and I shall return right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. I'm here today with Carl Dixon. Once more time, you can find Carl at proplibrary.com. I suggest you do so. There's a ton of information there that can help large, medium, small companies, any company bidding on government business. So, Carl, we've gone through a number of issues here. Bring it all together and tell us how we can use these tactics, these thoughts on improving the overall win rate, developing a win rate program here or improvement program.
Sure, Mark. I started off by tossing out that, you know, a 10% increase in win rate can often be mathematically the same as having 40% more leads. And that sounds great and wonderful, but then that brings you back to the hard reality of how do we increase our win rate by 10%? And the things that we've been talking about all contribute to that. And the best part about it is that they often contribute to it in ways that don't increase your costs. So when you look at things like the business development phase, structuring that around the questions that your proposal writers are going to need answers to, doesn't cost you a whole lot to put that list of questions together and use it to focus your business development efforts. But at the same time, when you do it, it gives you potentially some very useful information because you have questions and you have some answers for some of them and not for others. And you can track that performance and track it against your win rate and start to see which questions, which answers are impacting your win rate the most. And then you can use that to focus your effort in the business development phase in the future on getting the answers that are really impacting your win rate. And when you take those questions from the business development phase and you turn them into instructions at the start of the proposal, you can do the same thing again. You can look at how well you did with the planning of the proposal and the creation of the instructions and the proposal content plan and how that correlates with your win rate. And you can set up a feedback loop so that you get real continuous improvement by refining that flow of information from the discovery of a lead all the way to the submission and award, the closing of the sale. So, I think that focusing on your win rate not only helps you structure the process, but it brings us back to that idea of thinking about the process in terms of return on investment instead of cost. So when you start implement, one of the things that I do when I implement the process for companies is I like to start off with a pipeline assessment to get the metrics for where their win rate is and how their pipeline is structured. And over time, as we implement process and change, we can track how that impacts their win rate and look at the financial results it's providing so that the things that we do, all the staffing decisions, should we hire somebody else to do this? Oh my God, if we're going to do that, how are we going to accomplish it? Our B&P budget going to cover that? All of those decisions should be made based on return on investment criteria. And looking at things as investment means you don't spend more on them. Okay. It means that you cut off the bad investments. But the good investments, maybe you do spend more on those because they're generating a profitable return. So instead of just simply looking at the proposal function as a cost center and looking at the way to maximize profitability for the company by reducing its costs, I think that companies do much better when they look at the return on investment that they want to achieve, and they look at how to structure both the business development and proposal functions in order to best generate return on investment.
Okay. So one of the things that you almost depend as a matter of course to your articles. You write, I always feel relieved when I get to the end of an article like this and I check to see if what I wrote is consistent with what we've recommended in the past and built on our process. So the whole idea of process here is not simply to improve win rate, but to improve the use of the time that you spend in proposal development. Is that accurate?
Yes. If you want to increase the efficiency of your proposal function, then improving the productivity by getting rid of all that wasted effort that people put in the proposals, by making sure that people have the information they need so they're not writing in circles around the things that they don't know, okay, that will improve the efficiency of your proposal process and enable you to get more out of the staff that you have and maximize your return on investment.
Okay. So you not only have the prop library side of your business, you also do training. Do you do public training anymore? Live?
I don't do open enrollment training. I was going to use a term that's a lot less nice from back in the days when I did training, or when I did proposals at a company that did training. But the and I don't really focus on open enrollment training. I do highly customized training.
Okay, but I do in-house. Do you mind if I give out your email address?
No, please do.
Okay. It's carl.dixon, D-I-C-K-S-O-N, carl.dixon@captureplanning.com. That's the address that I use for Carl. And any response. So if you need in-house training, again, he's not going to do open enrollment courses. So and frankly, I've pretty much slowed down on that. I am going to be producing webinars for the types of training I do, so you can get them. But you can get Carl's training at proplibrary.com if you're a subscriber. So, but I suggest if you want to instill these processes into your company and improve your win rate, you get in touch with Carl. He's the man here. Accurate statement.
Don't be modest. I'm certainly a geek on this subject. You may have noticed that I kind of like to talk about it. So if people have questions about anything that I've said, want more details, or want to challenge something, or clarification or whatever, go ahead and email me. Even if it's just to talk about the particular nuances of doing proposals and winning business. I'm a geek. I love to talk about it.
Cool. Carl.dixon@captureplanning.com. Carl, always fun to have you on the show, man.
Thank you.
And
good to be here.
Let me know when you're coming to town again, because I know right now you're on the beach in Key West, and you know, it is what it is. This is not my day job. Carl does the proposal side, and he can certainly offer some detailed advice on the business development side. I do the marketing side. If you need help on the marketing side, content marketing, PR, traditional PR, web-based PR, developing a marketing strategy that supports your business in this radically altered environment, give me a call. Drop me a line at markamtower@gmail.com. And thank you very much for listening to Amtower Off Center.
You've been listening to Amtower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Amtower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.